Today on Straight Talk Africa, the United Nations General Assembly has elected Ugandan Foreign Minister Sam Kahamba Kutesa as its new president. How significant is this selection? That discussion is coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, June 18th. I am Shaka Salih.
Well, hello, Shaka.
And hello, Mariama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss and analyze the significance of the United Nations General Assembly as controversial Ugandan Foreign Minister becomes the president-elect for the 69th session of the World Body.
Well, a topic that had many feeling very proud that yet another African was chosen to serve in such a high-level position, but others with very little hope of change, given who Kutesa is. Well, coming up later in our social media inbox, we'll reveal your thoughts on the issue. We hope you'll stay with us.
But first, Ugandan Foreign Minister Sam Kahamba Kutesa will be the new chief of the United Nations General Assembly. He was elected despite an 11th-hour campaign launched online by human rights activists to prevent him from being selected as the head of the international body. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
Despite the controversy surrounding Ugandan Foreign Minister Sam Kutesa, he was elected by acclamation without a vote in the 193-nation General Assembly to become the 69th president of the General Assembly. In accepting the post, Kutesa pledged to promote gender equality and women's rights and to continue a United Nations drive to eradicate poverty and combat climate change.
Our world continues to be confronted with different challenges of global reach and impact. They include poverty and hunger, underdeveloped education and health services, unemployment, poor and inadequate infrastructure in many developing countries, insufficient and expensive energy, climate change and rising sea levels, armed conflicts, and emerging threats to peace and security.
The Ugandan diplomat said that his chosen theme for the UNGA's 69th session will be delivering on and implementing a transformative post-2015 development agenda.
I'll focus on further advancing gender equality and empowerment of women in the 69th session, in which we will mark the 20th anniversary of the groundbreaking Beijing meeting.
Uganda has been heavily criticized in recent months on a wide range of issues, including abuse of human rights and its anti-gay legislation led by Western nations. Maria Barnett is a senior researcher in the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch.
We've seen a rash of very, very poor laws be passed in this parliament. For example, the anti-homosexuality law, the problem there being not just the criminalization of same-sex conduct, but the restrictions on talking about homosexuality, on organizations that seek to work on the rights of homosexuals, real restrictions on freedom of association and expression in that law.
Mr. Kutesa was questioned by reporters about his country's controversial laws on homosexuality.
As long as they respect the privacy, their right to privacy, I have no problem with it at all.
Ms. Barnett has other concerns about the rights of non-violent protesters.
We also still have, really significant concerns that as protests have occurred in Uganda over the last several years, people have been killed by the use of live gunfire, and we haven't seen real investigations. We haven't seen anyone held accountable for those deaths.
Mr. Kutesa's election generated a lot of debate, including an online petition that had garnered over 13,000 signatures by the time of his election. The petition alleged that Mr. Kutesa was a spokesman for a regime that has oppressed its citizens and a government that was responsible for the death of millions of people across the region. Other critics said that Kutesa's election as president of the General Assembly was a questionable one, raising issues of corruption and conflict of interest.
First of all, let me tell you this, that I have had a conspiracy by members of the opposition in our country, both inside and outside, who have tried their best to malign my name. I have never been found corrupt. I'm not homophobic.
In 1999, he was censored by the Ugandan parliament for allegedly misuse of office and influence peddling. He has also survived multi-million dollar corruption scandals since no formal charges were brought against him. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now, for more on the circumstances surrounding the election of the new UNGA president, I am joined by my colleague, Margaret Bashir, United Nations correspondent, who joins us from the UN Secretariat in New York. Good afternoon, Margaret.
Hi, Shaka. Thanks for having me on with you.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Margaret. We now, of course, know who the next president of the UNGA is. So why was there so much controversy surrounding Mr. Sam Kahamba Kutesa?
Well, I think the controversy was mostly outside this building, not inside it, among the human rights community. Here, basically, the bottom line is it's up to the Africa group to decide who they were going to put forth as their candidate. And they chose Mr. Kutesa. So other countries don't really have a huge objection to it. If it flies with the Africans, then it's okay with them because it's their turn to choose a president of the General Assembly from their part of the world.
Now, how important is this particular position, Margaret, especially because I was reading a major Ugandan newspaper, The Monitor, and had headlines suggesting that there were some two individuals who fought about Mr. Kutesa's new position because they were arguing as to who is the boss. Is it Kutesa, the president of the UNGA, or is it Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations?
Well, I hope nobody's going to fight about it here, but, you know, look, the Secretary General is the Secretary General, and he's the face of the United Nations. He's in charge here. The President of the General Assembly is a symbolic figurehead position, but he is sort of the moral leader, if you want, of the 193 member states of the General Assembly, of the UN, sorry, who make up the General Assembly. So it's also a high-profile position. The president of the GA does travel quite a bit during the year. He attends conferences and summits. So he does have a presence, you know, internationally. But the secretary general is really who's in charge of the UN. He is the world's top diplomat.
Now, Margaret, we also know, of course, that the Secretary General is paid by the United Nations.
True.
The international taxpayers.
But true, he gets a salary.
What about the President of the UN General Assembly? Because the last time I checked, you have to be paid by the country where you come from.
That's correct. So if a country puts forward a candidate, they foot the bill for his salary and for his housing while he's here in New York. And if you've ever lived in New York, you know it's not a cheap place to live. So they better be prepared to pay a good rent for him while he's here, too.
Well, I'm afraid time is not our best ally. Thank you so much, Margaret, for your insight.
Thanks, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Now, joining us here in our Washington studio is our distinguished guest, Kenneth Mwenda, an adjunct professor of law at American University. You're most welcome, Kenneth.
Thank you, Shaka. Look forward to the discussion.
It's always a pleasure, of course, to host you on Straight Talk Africa. Milton Alimadi, the founder and the publisher of the Black Star News, one of New York's investigative online newspapers, he joins us from VOA Studios in New York. It's a pleasure, of course, to have you once again on Straight Talk Africa, Milton Alimadi.
As always, it's my pleasure, Ndugu Shaka. Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome, sir. And last but not least, Dr. James Jonah, former United Nations Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Dr. Jonah currently serves as Senior Fellow, Ralph Bunche Institute for International Studies. He joins us via a telephone link up from soda shopping, Sweden. Well, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to host you again on Straight Talk Africa, this time, of course, from Sweden.
Thank you.
You're most welcome, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. You just heard what my colleague Margaret had to say about this very, very important position at the UN. Why should there be controversy, especially given that the African continent has endorsed him? And it is a turn for the African continent. And of course, as you saw, no one even tried to oppose him in that 38-floor building in Manhattan.
It's a very interesting scenario that is unfolding. There are various stakeholder interests, and I think we should recognize that. Some stakeholders, of course, will look at it from the point of pro-Africanism, that this is one of their sons who's now president of the UN General Assembly. However, there's also the constituency of other public interests, such as NGOs, for example, lobbyists, human rights activists, who might raise issues about what is going on domestically in Uganda and attributing that to Mr. Kutesa. However, the position of president of the United Nations General Assembly has nothing to do with representation of Uganda. A person is chosen in his own individual private capacity. So he's not there as an ambassador of Uganda. He's there in his own right. We have to understand that very well. Secondly, the president of the General Assembly of the United Nations has no voting rights in the General Assembly. He's a symbolic ceremonial figure, although the position is prestigious. His role is more akin to what, drawing an analogy, one would say, for example, the Speaker of the National Assembly. He's a custodian of the rules of procedure of the General Assembly. That's his fundamental role. And he has no right or power to interfere in the decision-making process of the General Assembly. So his powers are very limited. He's more of a ceremonial figure.
They're really very symbolic, if you will.
That's true.
Because the last time I checked, the job of the UN General Assembly really is about engaging in debates.
Right.
It rarely makes very important decisions, really.
Yes, the UN General Assembly is the main deliberative body charged with responsibility for policy making, so to speak. And each member country has one vote. And the UN, the General Assembly president, as I indicated earlier, as president of the body, has no right to vote. He only facilitates the discussions. And behind him are 21 vice presidents. And if you look at the way the structure of the General Assembly, the way it's done under the rules of procedure, the General Assembly can actually formulate its own rules, which are ever sort of in a nebulous developing phase. So the General Assembly has a lot of discretion to devise or develop new rules as it's going on. And no member state, for example, of the five permanent members of the Security Council can put forward a candidate as president for the General Assembly.
Correct.
Okay, and of course, the five member states can have membership as under the vice, can have representation under the vice presidents, the 21 vice president. But none of those can act as president in the absence of the incumbent. So there are some safeguards which have been built into the system to ensure that, you know, everything runs smoothly.
Why is the position characterized by some as a hardly noticed yet crucial job?
I think, again, it comes back to what Margaret pointed out. The main chief executive officer of the United Nations, to put it that way, is the Secretary General.
The CEO.
The CEO. That's the main CEO. Like I pointed out earlier, the president of the General Assembly is more of a ceremonial titular figure, more like the Speaker of the National Assembly or Parliament. You know, when he's in Parliament, he does not represent a constituency like an elected member of Parliament. So he has no right to vote. He only has to ensure that the rules of procedure in Parliament are observed and the Parliament conducts its roles effectively. So that's really the best analogy if you have to look at the General Assembly.
I see. Well, before we pause for a short break, we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a look at the selection process of the President of the UN General Assembly. The election is governed by the UNGA rules of procedure. Member states elect a candidate by simple majority. The selection of the UNGA president follows an unwritten system of regional rotation. Traditionally, a single nominee is selected by the regional grouping and submitted unopposed to the UNGA for election, precluding a competitive electoral process. The pattern of regional rotation since 1963 has been Latin America and Caribbean states, African states, Western European and other states, Asian states, and Eastern Europe.
Up nonstop, voafootball.com.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me go to you, Milton Alimadi. Good afternoon, Milton.
Good afternoon, Dugu Shaka.
I am hugely terrific. Of course, you just heard that this is a job that really happens to be ceremonial and perhaps symbolically very, very important. So if in fact that's what it is, why is it, from what I have seen, that you were trying to stop your compatriot, Sam Kahamba Kutesa, to getting to that tall building in Manhattan and perhaps sitting on the 38th floor? I'm afraid that we are experiencing some technical difficulties. Let me go to James Jonah in Sweden. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific. Well, you are the man, of course, when it comes talking about the United Nations. After all, you worked there for more than 30 years, correct?
Yes, yes, yes. And I must say that the previous speakers, including Margaret, they gave the straightforward, correct, but it's far more than that.
It is far more than that.
The post of president has evolved tremendously over the years. Let me give you one key. What you need in that job is a very skilled diplomat who can conduct behind-the-scenes negotiations. While it is true that he conducts meetings, the president can make rulings, and that's very, very important. He can make a ruling, which, of course, must be upheld by the assembly, and that can change things. Let me give you one example. When Bouteflika Speaker was the president of the General Assembly, he made a ruling which antagonized the entire Western delegation, but he was upheld by the non-aligned countries. When you go to 1964, the greatest crisis in the United Nations on the financing of peacekeeping, had it not been for the statesmanship of President Saki of Ghana, the UN may have collapsed. And he used his skill in the 19th session, where there was no voting, actually, throughout the session, and he managed that. So it can be very important. Then I give another example. When the Saudi representative became the president of the General Assembly, he insisted with the Secretary General, and I was part of the negotiations, that he should have an office in his secretariat, that the staff should be paid for by the UN Secretariat. These things were never done before. Now, this is part of the routine. So the president of the General Assembly, depending who he is, can be very important. The same thing with Salim Salim. When Salim Salim was president of the General Assembly, because of his skill and his knowledge of the UN, he gave tremendous input. So it is not just so formalized. He can change things, can shake things. During the reforms of the General Assembly and the Security Council, the president of the General Assembly can conduct negotiation, can change the deal, introduce new elements. So I think that the political evolution of the job is far more than just conducting the assembly. He can be very, very instrumental if he knows he or she knows the job. So I just want to give that. This is based on my experience in the UN and involved with so many of the presidents of the General, even Mongi Slim, who was the first African president of the General Assembly during the Congo crisis. He played a tremendous role in the Congo crisis by virtue of being the president of the General Assembly. And Dag Hammarskjöld, the best Secretary General we have ever had, used Mongi Slim a great deal in his conduct of negotiations to solve the Congo crisis.
We should point out, by the way, that Salim Ahmed Salim hailed from Tanzania, and perhaps we should also give you an opportunity to talk about another important person that held that position, and that was Jean Ping from the Gabon.
Yes, yes. Well, that was very, very, very interesting because, you know, Jean Ping was not like Salim. But he came at a time when the UN was engaged in reform negotiations, at a very difficult position. And he was able, as president of the General Assembly, to maneuver the situation, not to break down. He had a very good staff with him, paid for by the secretariat, and he was very good at that. And I think it was after that he became the head of the African Union. So it varies, and I can give you another African president who made tremendous impact, Joseph Garba of Nigeria, at a very crucial time, plays a very, very important role.
Brigadier Garba, we should of course also point out perhaps that Alex Kwasong Sekei from Ghana was the first black African to hold that position. Very interesting, because Ghana also happens to have the distinction of having had the first black African to hold the position of the Secretary General of the UN, and also the first African country south of the Sahara and north of Limpopo, as they used to say, to regain its political independence back in 1957 under the Osage for Dr. Kwame Nkrumah.
But you know, Kwasong Sekei was a real statesman, and anybody who knows him will tell you that type of statesmanship among African delegates don't exist any longer. So no one will push him around. You know, and of course, Ghana was very, very important. But also, don't forget that very early on, Africa recommended a woman president of the assembly, Miss Angie Brooks of Liberia.
That is correct.
So the Africans have been very, very, very good in spreading it all around. Women, East, West, South and North.
Especially given, in fact, that there have actually been, I think, only three women that have held that position.
Exactly.
Let me go to Alimadi. Milton Alimadi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, my brother.
Now, Ali Madi, why were you trying to stop your compatriot Sam Kahamba Kutesa from holding that important position?
I think it's even easier for me to answer the question now because Dr. Jona has laid out the record of Africans with stellar credentials that have served in that position. The first one from Ghana, and then we had Angie Brooks, the first and only female from Liberia who served in that position. We have Dr. Salim Ahmed Salim. We'd have Joseph Garba. We've had people with impeccable credentials who served in that position. And then we have Mr. Sam Kutesa. So Mr. Sam Kutesa, adjoining that list of individuals, unfortunately, it diminishes that list. It diminishes their achievements. And it reflects very poorly on the United Nations organization. And we can discuss Mr. Kutesa's foreign minister of Uganda and how Uganda's policies really do not adhere to any of the principles of the United Nations. And we can also discuss Mr. Kutesa, the individual. Briefly, Uganda. As you and I know, Uganda was found liable in 2005 for war crimes in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, massacres, plunder of resources. 7 million Congolese have died as a result of that war. And Uganda was assessed $6 to $10 billion to pay to the government in Kinshasa. That money has not yet been paid. And in fact, the International Criminal Court launched an investigation that was covered in the Wall Street Journal, June 8, 2006. The article said Uganda's president himself, General Museveni, contacted then Secretary General Kofi Annan and told him to block that investigation. Now, how can we turn around today, given those set of facts, and have Sam Kutesa, the Foreign Affairs Minister of Uganda, become president of the General Assembly of the United Nations? It means we are not taking the United Nations seriously. It means the UN is not taking itself seriously. And we as Africans, at some point, we have to say no. We have to make our voices heard that we oppose rewarding this kind of activity.
But what about the fact that despite your opinion, what about the fact that the African Union found him competent, found him the most suitable son of the soil to essentially, really, to do the job?
Well, first of all, Shaka, unfortunately, these are actually not my opinions. These are established facts. I mean, the International Court of Justice had a hearing, and came to that conclusion. So that, with all due respect, they're actually not my opinion. And then in terms of the African Union, the African Union clearly did not vet this individual, because if they had done any vetting at all, they would have found out that in 1999, he was censored, serious censor, by the Uganda Parliament. These are lawmakers from his own political party that looked at the facts and found that he had committed a serious conflict of interest. He diverted resources from the country's national airline, Uganda Airlines, into his own private company, Entebbe Handling Services, and caused Uganda Airlines to collapse. Him, according to the transcripts in the parliamentary proceeding, him and the brother of the president, Salim, General Salim Saleh. This is not my opinion. This is what the parliament in Uganda came to the conclusion. If they had vetted him, they would have found out that when Uganda hosted the Commonwealth conference in 2007, hundreds of millions of dollars went missing. One estimate was $150 million. They would have found out that the British government considered blocking Mr. Kutesa's visa. And how do we know that? Because it was in a letter written by Jerry Lanier, who was the United States ambassador to Uganda. And he wrote a confidential memo, which was published in WikiLeaks. It was dated January 13, 2010. And he said the British government is considering a visa ban on Mr. Kutesa because it's believed he and other ministers stole at least $27 million. If the African Union had looked at these set of facts, I doubt they would have selected him to be the candidate to represent Africa as president of the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Now, what about the fact that Mr. Kutesa has never, in fact, been convicted by a court of law in Uganda? In fact, he goes out to say that, you know, it is people like you, essentially, who are trying to malign his name. I'll come to you after the break. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Diarro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. In the meantime, let's take a look at our letter of the week.
Matthias Behakanira from Kampala, Uganda, writes, "The whole world expects the United Nations to create a peaceful environment, especially where humanity is often treated inhumanely. In Nigeria by Boko Haram, Afghanistan, Iraq, in Somalia by Al-Shabaab, South Sudan, Syria, and Ukraine, to mention a few. However, the Honorable Kutesa will deliver, despite the fact that people naturally think that such a post will always favor the home side. With international support, the UNGA president will be serving the global village, not just Africa. But many of the security challenges he's inheriting are in Africa. Congratulations."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Once again, let's take a look at a list of prominent Africans who have held the presidency of the UNGA over the last 5 decades. In 2004, Jean Ping from Gabon. In 1994, Amara Essi from the Ivory Coast. Between 1989 and 1990, Joseph Garba from Nigeria. In 1984, Paul Lusaka from Zambia. Between 1979 and 1980, it was Salim Ahmed Salim from Tanzania. In 1969, Angie Brooks from Liberia. And in 1964, it was Alex Kwesan Saki from Ghana.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. On June 11th, the UN General Assembly elected Ugandan Foreign Minister Sam Kutesa as its president, despite a surge of criticism. Allegations of corruption have long dogged Kutesa, which he has continued to deny. He's also a huge supporter of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's anti-gay bill. In 2011, Kutesa was forced to resign as Uganda's Foreign Affairs Minister after being accused of accepting bribes from a British oil company. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, how will the selection of Sam Kutesa as the president of the UNGA impact the international body's policy towards Africa? Well, let's begin right away with a comment from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Monrovia in Liberia, who writes, "I think the UNGA needs a mature leader with bright future, not an opportunist. I am of the conviction that the selection of Sam Kutesa will make a positive impact on the international body's policy toward Africa." Another comment comes from Charles Lungu from Lusaka in Zambia, and he says, "The selection of Kutesa can only be meaningful if African leaders realize what role they should be taking in making decisions at the global level, rather than waiting for Western backing and funding. His presidency alone cannot move mountains." Well, I think I like that phrase there. His presidency definitely cannot move mountains. Pretty telling here, Shaka.
Very interesting. Ali Madi, why don't you pick it up from there? Ali Madi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Okay, so you had actually posed a very interesting question, which is a fair question, that he's not been convicted or found guilty. Mm-hmm. And you notice that's something that he actually said at the UN after his election. He said, I have not been found guilty. You cannot be found guilty until you're tried. And he's never been tried, and that's the problem.
What do you mean he has not been tried? He has gone through
the
process.
He's never been tried.
He has gone through
the
process.
He's never been tried. With regard to the Commonwealth funds, there was never a trial on that issue. That issue was thrown out on a technicality by a judge. When it comes to the alleged acceptance of millions of dollars in bribes from an oil company, the Parliament of Uganda came to the conclusion that it did not have the funds to do the kind of investigation that would be necessary, which would to travel overseas and to trace the bank accounts. So on those key issues, he was never tried. The only time that evidence was heard was when the members of Parliament heard the evidence in 1999, and that is the only time they actually came to a conclusion. They censored him. Had that been a court of law, he would have been convicted. And that is the point I'm trying to make.
And Chaka, there's one other
very critical point, actually. He faces a conflict of interest. His private company, Entebbe Handling Services, actually does business with the United Nations. He has contracts with the United Nations. I don't think there are many foreign ministers around the world who have private companies that has contracts with the UN. It's like saying Secretary John Kerry has a company that handles luggage and cargo at Port-au-Prince Airport in Haiti on behalf of the UN. That would be unconscionable. Secretary Kerry would have to resign. Why are we treating Mr. Kutesa differently? Is it just because he's from Africa? That is quite condescending, and that is wrong.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback.
Well, yes, that conflict of interest would definitely, I would definitely be interested in knowing how the UN feels about that. We'll move on to a posting from Israel Taba from Mubi in Nigeria, who writes, the UN is not about Africa, it's about the world. So whoever heads the General Assembly is not there to favor or pay special attention to the country or region where he comes from. All member states have their particular problems, so if he can attend to these problems fairly, I would consider him a good leader. I think that's a pretty fair comment there. We're gonna, while we're at it, we're gonna check out another comment from Ruhundi Ambrose from Kampala in Uganda, who says, he cannot change anything because he never even changed the lives of his people he represented in over 20 years. Well, Chaka, that's another pretty harsh comment. What are your thoughts on this one?
Now, Kenneth, you are a lawyer, obviously, unlike me, who never attended law school. Milton raises a very important and compelling point, especially about the apparent conflict of interest. What about the fact that Mr. Kutesa is on record saying he has issued a statement that he will have absolutely nothing to do with his business interests for the year that he is going to be in office? Is that good enough?
First of all, let me start by saying we have to understand, one, the tenure of office for the president of the UN General Assembly is 1 year, non-renewable, so 12 months. So he'll be in office for 12 months, and it's not a renewable contract. Secondly, if, as allegations are showing in the media, online and everywhere, he's had contracts with the United Nations, the most prudent thing to do, and I believe the UN, like any other international body, has procurement guidelines, the most prudent thing for him to do is to make a full disclosure of the type of contracts that he has, because these contracts were entered into prior to his being elected as president of the General Council. They are not post the election era, they are prior, so they've been ongoing.
Right.
So the most prudent thing to do would be to make a full disclosure to the United Nations and wait for the procurement people within the UN to rule whether, you know, these contracts can be sustained or can be annulled. You know, we cannot prejudge the procurement guidelines of the UN. I think that would be very unfair. Secondly, on the issue of prosecution, which he raises, I think Mr. Kutesa himself, I think these are legitimate arguments. The international law is driven by what we call under Article 38(1) of the ICJ statute, in part by civilized norms of civilized states, which includes the common law, norms from the common law, which brings to the fore the presumption of innocence. until a person is convicted by a court of law, he is presumed innocent. Mm-hmm. And it's not for him to trigger proceedings in a court of law. Mm-hmm. If the prosecuting people, the officials, the anti-corruption agency are not doing it, it's not his fault. He who claims must prove. Those who claim that he has stolen have to take him to court and prove. Otherwise, he's an innocent man.
I hear you. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, we appreciate everyone's feedback, whether it's in social media form, or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we look at the primary role of the African Media Initiative, which is to strengthen private and independent media in Africa. We'll discuss that and more next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and today's topic, we are discussing and analyzing the significance of the United Nations General Assembly. Well, I gather that I have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Anthony. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Anthony, can you hear me? I'm afraid that Anthony just dropped. Let me come again. So you said basically that as far as Kutesa is concerned, really, he doesn't frankly have to worry whether or not he has been tried on the allegations from somewhere. That is not his responsibility.
It's not his responsibility. There are two things. We need to distinguish between the political discourse and the legal discourse. Much of the arguments are political arguments. They are not legal arguments. Mm-hmm. On a legal basis alone, he is on firm ground. But if you bring in politics and all these ideological issues, it becomes a different ballgame.
Right.
And the same thing occurs when you look at his election. He was unanimously elected. And also, again, if you look at the role of the president of the General Assembly, like Dr. Jonah pointed out, I did indicate earlier on that the rules of procedure in the UN General Assembly are evolving rules. Mm-hmm. And the body can set new rules as it's sitting right there and then, which might change the where the game is played. So the the powers of the president of the General Assembly can evolve depending on the rules which are prevailing at the time. And we need to distinguish what in international law, for example, drawing an analogy, we call state practice on the one hand, customary international law and treaty law. The rules of procedure are like treaty law, but you have state practice and customs which have evolved over time, mm-hmm. different presidents doing certain things depending on their personality and their powers. Mm-hmm. So, but that is not really part of the rules.
I see.
It's a practice that has evolved.
I see. Now,
Shaka,
Dr.
Shaka.
Jonah, I'm coming to you. I wanted to find out from you whether you think from what you have seen, from what you have heard, and given your experience, you think there is anything, frankly, that would disqualify Mr. Kutesa from performing his duties as president of the UNGA?
No, you see, I just want to say the procedure is rather prosaic in the UN. Let me tell you, I've been part of the discussions. You see, it's a rotation. Now, when it comes to the time, say, of Africa, the African group meets. There is a committee of the African group that solicits recommendations. Now, it is well structured in the African group. Say it goes to East Africa. Then if the ambassador of Uganda is a popular person or very effective, they say, okay, we select somebody from Uganda. That's all. There, Uganda produce somebody. And there's never any time when, as I said, that you scrutinize the candidate. It's never been done. I give another case. There was one time, one country, I can give the name of the country, Bulgaria. There was a very popular ambassador that we all liked, and he was felt to be a good president of the General Assembly. Now, once it was agreed that it should be Bulgaria, a foreign minister who nobody knew said he will be the president of the General Assembly, and that nothing the UN could do about it. And I can remember one, not in the case of person, in the case of Secretary General, I made a proposal which, where I said, why don't we scrutinize candidates of the office of Secretary General like they do for a CEO? You know what the answer to me was? That this is not a business and this is not an academic institution. So they have never at any time in my life, I'll give another case. For many Africans was very bitter when Tricky was the president of the General Assembly. And you know Tricky's relationship with the president of Libya, the leader of Libya. He was the man who was in contact with all the liberation movement, like RUF, for example, in Sierra Leone. He was the man negotiating with Charles Taylor and others. But nothing anybody could do. Because once you say Libya, Libya produces somebody, and that person normally goes to. There are only two or three cases in Latin America where the United States did not like the candidates for president of the General Assembly. And what they did was to then organize an opposition in Latin America to that candidate. A candidate was produced, lobbying was done, and that candidate was elected by the General Assembly against the candidate which have been produced by the Latin American group. Right. So there's never that heavy scrutiny. I would say in the whole United Nations, there's hardly any deep scrutiny of any candidate for any job.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. Today we are discussing and analyzing the significance of the United Nations General Assembly as the Ugandan controversial foreign minister becomes the president-elect. The 69th session of the World Body. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Let's take a look at the role and duties of the president at the UNGA. The president governs over the UN General Assembly, which is the main deliberative, policy-making, and representative organ of the 193-member United Nations. According to Rule 35 of the UNGA Rules of Procedure, the president shall declare the opening and closing of each UNGA session, direct meeting discussions, and ensure the observance of the rules. He shall rule on points of order and shall have complete control of the proceedings at any meeting. He may, in the course of the discussion of an item, propose a time limit on the speakers. He may also limit the number of times each representative may speak. He can also propose the suspension or the adjournment of a debate or a meeting under discussion.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. If you have just joined us, we are discussing and analyzing the significance of the United Nations General Assembly as the Ugandan controversial foreign minister becomes the president-elect for the 69th session of the World Body. Our distinguished guests are Kenneth Mwenda, an adjunct professor of law at American University, Milton Alimadi, the founder and publisher of the Black Star News, one of New York's investigative online newspapers, who is joining us from VOA Studios in New York. And last but not least, Dr. James Jonah, former United Nations and Secretary General for Political Affairs. He joins us live via telephone link up from Soda Shopping in Sweden. I hope I have not murdered your city.
No.
Well, I have to say, gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
Let me go briefly
to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Anthony from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka.
Here's the terrific.
I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my question is that I hope the contestant for the UNGA president position have been alleged for so many issues related to corruption and human rights abuse. And I hope the UN have heard this through social networks, radios, and televisions. But what are they doing to make sure that they get the right candidate with the good moral standards and good background, because this is a very important position for the UN. And if they just pick somebody with questionable integrity, it means there is a weakness in the whole process of getting the president for the UNGA.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anthony. I think your point, frankly, has been made, and time happens not to be our best ally. Let me come to you quickly, Milton. Of course, you heard that, but you also heard a little bit earlier from a veteran UN top official telling you that when it comes to vetting, that sounds like a foreign language, so to speak, and as far as some of these international organizations are concerned. But let me frankly come to one person that comes to mind, and that is Jean Ping of Gabon, who apparently was a very successful and respected president of the UNGA, and let alone, in fact, became the chairman, of course, as you remember, of the African Union, despite the fact that when he became president of UNGA, he came from Gabon, which was under Omar Bongo. You could have said dictator Omar Bongo. You could obviously have said that was a country that had a democracy deficit. How come he was able to perform his role?
Shaka, this is how I'll answer it. I doubt that the U.S. ambassador to Gabon wrote a letter similar to this one, which the U.S. ambassador to Uganda wrote. And I read it very briefly. The U.K. is considering visa restrictions for senior Ugandan officials guilty of misusing $27 million allocated to the November 2007 Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. Their review of the CHOGM expenditures, at least a dozen government ministers and several ministers, including Kutesa, Vice President Bukenya, Public Works Minister Nasasira, have been implicated in the CHOGM scandal. We regard Kutesa's corruption as egregious. And this is not coming from these so-called enemies that he's talking about.
Egregious.
This is coming from the United States ambassador, and the United States is one of the countries that actually supports Uganda. So this is a very serious matter.
Egregious.
I don't think if the
egregious, of course, would almost mean outrageous. But what about the United States itself? What about the Secretary of State, John Kelly, the boss of that ambassador that you are talking about? Are you suggesting that he did not access that letter? How come he did not, for example, deny him the visa to come to the United States?
Thank you, Shaka. And now you ask the more serious questions, which actually raises the issue of international politics and what the UN is all about. As Dr. Jonah indicated, in these instances, these are political decisions. And he gave an example of when there was a certain candidate that was not favorable to the West, and that candidate was blocked by promoting another candidate. In this instance, we know that basically, because Uganda provides troops to stabilize Somalia, Uganda has a blank check. And I think it's because of that consideration that the egregious corruption, which was mentioned by the U.S. ambassador himself, was ignored in this instance. And that's how I would answer that question.
What about the voices of two New York senators on record, also who said perhaps he shouldn't actually get the job precisely because he comes from a country that has recently signed a bill into law that, according to them, discriminates against the LGBT?
Absolutely. And I think it was very important for those two senators, Senator Chuck Schumer, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, and in fact, Congressman Charles Rangel also made a very strong statement. And I think that should be taken seriously. I think going forward, it's not going to be easy for Mr. Kutesa to function. If Mr. Kutesa was truly a person of conscience, as his supporters indicate that he is, he should actually do the right thing and step aside.
Thank you.
UN laws actually allow for the election of another candidate going forward.
Thank you. What do you think Mr. Kutesa needs to do in order to make sure that he becomes perhaps the best president that he could possibly be?
I think the best thing for Mr. Kutesa now to do, first of all, he's been elected. There's no question of going back. Is to come out clean and especially on his contracts, business contracts with the UN. Mm-hmm. Make a full disclosure, public disclosure of what assets are involved and to what extent. And that's very important. On the issue of corruption charges, these are just charges, allegations.
Right.
Okay. Until they are proven in a court of law, the man is presumed innocent. Now we have to understand, I think the most important thing for us to understand to pick up from this case is that the UN Charter, the bedrock of the UN Charter is a promotion and protection of human rights. So the LGBT argument that, you know, Uganda has passed this law, that is one of the thorny issues behind this whole scenario, apart from the allegations.
Right.
People tend to think, well, this guy is part of that government. He supported that law. So how will he function with the UN when the UN is supposed to promote and support human rights? Is there a contradiction there? The dichotomy, I think that's where the conflict arises from.
You have 30 seconds. The last question, what about the salary? Why should Uganda be the one to pay for his salary and not Africa? Or the UN for that matter, really?
It's interesting. I mean, that is the practice that is there with the position of president of General Assembly of the UN. And until the rules of the game change, okay, any country under the rules of procedure, any country mm-hmm. can sponsor a candidate, and he did not be a citizen of that particular country. So Uganda, for example, can sponsor a candidate from Zambia, although it has never happened.
Well, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Kenneth Mwenda, an adjunct professor of law at American University, Milton Alimadi, the founder and publisher of the Black Star News,
thank you,
who joined us from VOA studios in New York. And last but not least, Dr. James Jonah, former United Nations Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. He joined us via telephone link up from Soda Shopping, Sweden. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. Also, don't forget to tune in to Voice of America's Africa 54, a 30-minute daily TV magazine program that features what's trending in news, health, sports, and lifestyle. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.